Hello and welcome to English Revision Pod. I am here as ever with my good friend Mr. Forster, and today we are going to be giving you an example of a language paper one question three. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, this is AQA, just in case we didn't clarify it.
Okay, we definitely didn't clarify. So thank you for jumping in with that. If you did not listen to our previous episode, I would recommend that you go back and listen to that episode first. The reason being, we are dealing with exactly the same extract in this episode. And in the last episode, we gave a lot of context about that episode and some general advice. So it would be a good idea to go back and listen to that first. As today, we're going to get quite quickly into the question, I think. Is that the plan, sir?
Yeah, so we'll talk briefly about question three as a start. And obviously, please do bear in mind any exam-specific advice like timings that we give, I would always suggest that you follow what your teacher says first. All of our advice in our revision packs and what we say, what we don't want to do is undermine something your teacher's said. But please do follow that. The main thing that you need to listen to from our settings is the approaches to the question, how to structure an answer, what to analyse, and top tips for answering it. But if there are any exam technique things, I know some teachers do suggest different approaches to the questions.
This is very true. And the main reason we set up this podcast was to undermine... I'm joking, of course. We don't want to do that at all. One thing I would say, though, is the more you practice, you might actually get a feel for it yourself. So your teacher will definitely give you ideas on how long to spend on each question. But what you might find is that actually I'm really confident with question two, but I struggle with question three, or vice versa. So it might be that when you get to the exam, you have practiced enough that you kind of know yourself where you need to maybe give yourself a little bit of extra time on one question and you sacrifice a little bit of time on another question. But that's a very personal thing, I would say.
And also, you've got to be aware of the number of marks per question. That's obviously crucial.
Absolutely. Don't do that classic thing where you get really stuck on one of the 8-mark questions and you think, oh, no, it's not good enough yet. And you spend ages trying to get yourself 1 or 2 extra marks on that question when you could have been spending that time on one of the questions that has a lot more marks available. What I always say is a good tip as well is write down some times on your paper when you think you will absolutely move on from that question. So if you sort of, when you first get into the exam hall, you could write down the points in time where you will think, look, no matter whether I'm happy with my answer or not, if it gets to this point in time, I'm dropping that question and I'm moving on to the next one.
Yeah, and it's maybe not a point for now, but as I said on a previous podcast, that's why I generally suggest to start at start with the writing question five, before doing questions 1 to 4. But that's maybe a discussion for another day.
Yeah, I disagree with that, but that is a discussion for another day. But anyway, we're going to get on to question three today. So last podcast, we introduced this extract from Life of Pi and we did a question two. As I said, if you've not listened to that yet, it would be a great idea to do so as it will give you a better understanding of the extract. But question three, Mr. Forster, is when students typically get least marks. It's the question that everybody struggles with the most. And it's also the question that asks you to look at the structure of an extract. Tell me, in your own words, Mr. Forster, what are we being asked to do when we consider the structure of an extract?
Yeah, I mean, again, having marked this paper for quite a few years, so many students confuse language and structure. And if you're talking, there is, of course, some crossover. It's a slightly artificial divide by the exam board. It's a little bit cheeky. I wouldn't divide them so clearly into separate questions if I was setting the paper, but unfortunately we don't live in that utopia of Mr. Forster's exam papers. So instead we're stuck in this fallen world. And what I would suggest is in our revision pack, there is an extensive list of things you might want to look out for on structure. But at a basic level, do not overcomplicate it. Do not worry about the terminology too much for this question. What you need to focus on is where do things happen? What happens in that moment? And why does it happen there? And what's changed? So if you have changes in a passage, where is there a zooming in from the broad to the narrow? Where are characters introduced? How are they introduced? Where there's a shift from the inside to the outside? Where's there a shift from action to thought? Where there's a shift between point of view? Anything where something changes is what you're really getting marks for here. So you're not analysing words, you're getting marks for analysing where do things happen and why do they happen here. So examiners, my last kind of point as an examiner here is that things I always look for when I'm marking is prepositional phrases like at the start, in the middle, at this point, later. These actually often signal a kind of that the candidate's thinking really about the structure and not simply describing or analyzing language.
Absolutely. And you've used that magic word in your explanation there, shift, right? You are looking for shifts. You are looking for changes in focus. If you are a visual person, right, everybody's brain works in a different way. Some people are very visual and they find it easy to kind of imagine the images of what they're reading. If you are that kind of person, then that should really help you with this part of the exam, because essentially what you're imagining is, if this was a film, if this extract was turned into a film, at what point would the camera change? At what point would the angle change? At what point would we have a close-up? At what point would everything zoom out and take in everything that's going on? And another brilliant thing to ask yourself is, why did that have to happen first, right? Students can often get to really good examples by considering, well, if that hadn't happened before, then the effect wouldn't have worked. Why did I need to know that thing before the writer told me that thing? Okay, why would it not have worked if I didn't know that thing? And that might unlock the key to some really good analysis here.
Yeah. Before you read the extract again, and we get you to pause it, just a brief word on the question itself. The question tells you quite a lot, but the questions are always very, very similar, if not the same, on question three. Is you now need to think about the whole of the source. So you must consider the whole. So my first top tip is try and have a point about how it ends. Often people run out of time and don't do that. You might want to consider that the extract comes at the end of a chapter. That could be a great for your final point, that actually, why does the chapter end in this way? Where does it leave the reader at the end of the chapter? The question says, how has the writer structured the text to interest you as a reader? It's a bit of a trap question, because interest you, if you start saying things like, it begins by focusing on this and that interests me, that's not it. We've got to engage with the why. So what in particular interests us about this? What effect does it have? How does it link to the story, the character, the characterization, the themes? So be aware, the question itself is a bit of a trap on question three, and we've got to go a little bit beyond this idea of interesting you, because conceivably a student could even quite honestly say, "Oh, it didn't interest me," you know, and that's not asked.
And they would write it in that voice as well, which would be terrible, of course. So a good thing to think as well is, if you're writing about the ending, write about the beginning. How does the end relate to the beginning of the extract? Did the thing that seemed like it was going to happen at the beginning end up happening, or was there something unexpected? Have you perhaps arrived back in the same place, but something has changed? Whenever considering the end, I would always say consider the end in relation to the beginning, because that's automatically you're making a structural point, right? You can't avoid making a structural point if you're talking about how the beginning compares to the end. So what we'd like you to do, pause this episode now. If you go into the description of the episode, you will find the handout which has the full Life of Pi extract, the questions and our notes on it. What I would say is, don't read our notes yet. Instead, read the extract yourself and then either have a go at answering the question, or if you're not ready to answer the question yet, at least bullet point some ideas. And then when you press play again, we will talk you through how we would answer the question. So pause this episode, get the handout if you haven't already, and go and have a look through. Okay, welcome back. Well, Mr. Forster, shall we go through the interesting structural shifts that we have spotted and what we would say about them?
Yeah, so you may not have time to write about all of these. And one thing I would always say, whenever I'm doing any question in an exam, I'm always looking at the time and I'm always adjusting my answer and cutting and adding bits depending on how much time I have left. So I'll reiterate the point I said before you read it, which is you absolutely must write about something from the beginning, something from the middle, and something from the end. That's absolutely vital. So if you're running out of time, don't necessarily write every single detail that you noticed about the second paragraph if it stops you considering the piece as a whole and getting to the end.
Yeah, absolutely. It is that thing about being selective. They use that word judicious in the mark scheme, don't they? And judicious basically means have you selected the best information to support your argument, or have you just pulled out a few things that you thought were kind of good? So what does it begin with? I would say the initial focus, you might want to mention that it's a first person narrator. So we are sharing the experiences very closely with the narrator themselves. And I think the initial focus is on the writer's disbelief. Okay, that's the main thing that jumped out of me jumped out at me, sorry, at the start of the extract was this idea that the narrator cannot believe, cannot really accept what is happening to them. Now, once you've written that, do you think that continues to build, or do you think that changes throughout the extract, Mr. Forster?
Yeah, I mean, what becomes clear as the extract goes on is that this is potentially an unreliable narrator. That's a really useful word to use. It's a first person narrator. It's potentially unreliable, and we see this building of tension and fear through the extract as we see things that the narrator can almost see but can't quite see. We have lots of repetition of verb phrases, as we actually said, looking at question two, that are to do with things that they're not sure about. I thought I saw. I thought I heard.
I think that's a really interesting point, that actually the narrator initially is separate from where they want to be. I mean, they don't want to be on the ship at all, but considering they're on the ship, they want to be with people who know what's going on. They want to be with the people who have answers to this terrible situation. But as you can see, the writer has put our focus on things that can almost be seen and heard, you know. So the interesting structural point is perhaps that the narrator is removed from the solution to the problem. They are isolated. They are separate. The next thing I would focus on is the introduction of, I don't actually know how to pronounce the name of this animal. Is it Gawa?
I don't know.
Okay, I thought that was a kind of thing you might have known. You've really let me down there, Mr. Forster. The introduction of that animal. It's almost like the introduction of a new character, isn't it? Which is always a good thing to talk about. And what happens to the fear and the tension that's already there when this animal is introduced?
Well, yeah, it becomes, as we talked about actually with question two, this is the crossover between language and structure. The focus on the animals here, and particularly this ox, is that this Indian wild ox, is that the animals here are kind of becoming a symbol of the fear of the crew, the fear of the boy, the first person narrator.
Yeah, I think so far, if we imagine the kind of line graph of the fear and the tension, it's increasing, isn't it? We've got this line going upwards. First of all, we had the groaning of the ship and the separate from the people who could help him. And now the sight of this wild animal continues to build the tension. So what you want to show the examiner is that you understand that this is the same feeling is building and becoming greater. The tension and the fear are getting worse, and the introduction of the animal structurally serves to increase the tension, the fear, and the chaos, and show you how everyone is feeling. But crucially, I think then the mood dramatically changes. When, at what point, Mr. Forster, is the fear, the tension, the panic, when is all that kind of shattered?
Yeah, so what do you mean by shattered there? Because I'm not sure if that's the word I'd...
Well, what I mean is that there seems to be a saviour, right? It seems to be that what all this terrible stuff is going on, but then for a moment, the tension is sort of... is broken because we believe that our character has found the people he needs to find, right?
Yeah, I mean, a phrase you could use is this kind of false equilibrium. So an equilibrium is, disequilibrium is when there's tension, equilibrium is a lack of tension, and a false equilibrium is what we get here, because he sees, of course, some officers on the bridge. He thinks he's going to be saved. He thinks they're going to help him. But of course, what really happens is, he's thrown into the water.
He's thrown overboard. So we get this really nice structural device that the writer employs, where they give us a kind of false sense of security. Just for a moment, the writer almost encourages us to relax. And you think, oh, thank goodness, he's found the people who can help him. He's found the people who are going to save him from this terrible situation. But then, of course, as you say, it's a false equilibrium. I wrote false dawn in my notes. But yeah, false equilibrium is very nice. And going back to what I said at the start of the podcast, ask yourself, why did I have to know that thing before I knew this thing? Because if you think about it, the moment he's thrown overboard is so shocking because you believe that those people were going to help him. Now, if the writer hadn't done that first, that moment wouldn't have been so shocking. Do you see what I mean, Mr. Forster? That's a classic example of asking yourself, why did I need to know that thing before I knew that thing. Does that make sense?
I think another thing we could kind of talk about here is the claustrophobia of the rest of the passage. He talks about in the first paragraph the stars vanishing into watery darkness. This kind of panoptic, zoomed out vision of the universe represented by the stars disappears, and he's in the bowels, the depths of the ship. But he makes it up to the bridge towards the end. So he makes it to the top of the ship. He makes it to sailors who he thinks are going to help him. So the narrative perspective is, and the position of the narrator, all seem to suggest this false equilibrium, or all seem to suggest that this tension is dissipating. But as we learn by the end, it is this false equilibrium that actually he's not reached safety at all. He's just being thrust into the water.
Absolutely. And then you can do your whole thing we were talking about of linking the beginning to the end, because the interesting structural point there might be that he has the thing that he feared at the start of the extract of him ending up in the water has absolutely happened. You know, his ultimate fear would be that the ship goes down and that he ends up in the water drowning. And the interesting thing you can say about the cliffhanger ending, of course, is that he has ended up in the water, but perhaps in a completely different and more shocking way to what we would have expected.
Yeah, and I think that's the final point, really, that this is the end of a chapter, and we're left there with our protagonists falling, you know, into the water, unsure of their fate. And this is, of course, the catalyst that brings about the rest of the story. The rest of the story is, of course, the boy, Piscine, in a lifeboat with a tiger, which you wouldn't necessarily know in the exam, but this is, so you can talk about the fact this is an end of a chapter. This is, it's left us with this waiting for the rest of the story to unfold.
Absolutely. Right. We hope you enjoyed joining us today for GCSE English Revision Pod. We will be back with another episode where we talk about question 4 with regards to this Life of Pi extract. Again, many thanks to the teacher who created this resource. Apologies, I can't remember who it was that I got it from, but it is a fantastic resource. So if you're listening, thank you very much for creating that. Mr. Forster, how can our listeners connect with us should they wish to?
You can follow us on Twitter at
GRevisionPod,
or you can email us at EnglishRevisionPod. Is it com or co.uk? I always forget. We'll put it in the details.
Yeah, I always forget. I rely on you for the email address, but I'm sure listeners can find us anyway. But yeah, please let us know how you're getting on, and if you're finding these podcasts useful. We are trying our best. It's always, I always feel really guilty when people email us and ask us to record episodes and then we can't do it. But obviously we are doing our best, and we will get as many episodes out to you as we can over the coming weeks and months. And we will see you next time on GCSE English Revision Pod. Have a great day.